From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Now, due to the extreme nature of the widespread damage caused by Hurricane Katrina, I'm going to alter slightly portions of tonight's program. You can also consult the coasttocoastam.com website for further scheduling if you're there stream linking or have a computer. Next hour, we will discuss important alternative health issues with Dr. Gabriel Cousins, and there will be hurricane coverage throughout the program and a special last hour devoted to this tragedy. This is indeed our Atlantis. It is our American Hiroshima, coining a phrase from WorldNet Daily. We have lost practically an entire city, close to 80% of New Orleans, and by the time this is done, much more will be gone. A big question, of course, is will these waters ever recede, and how will they ever build up levees again? You know, Hurricane Katrina, as devastating as it is, wasn't really the major cause for the destruction in New Orleans, unfortunately. Had those levees held, the widespread damage would not nearly be as significant as it is. First, some other stories. An American government whistleblower who denounced the decision to give billions of dollars in Iraq reconstruction contracts to a subsidiary of Vice President Dick Cheney's old company, Halliburton, has been fired from her job, ostensibly because of poor performance, they say. Bunatine Greenhouse, a senior civilian auditor of military contracts for the Army Corps of Engineers, went public last year with concerns about a no-bid contract given to Kellogg Brown & Root. It's called KBR. She told a congressional hearing that the decision was the most blatant, improper abuse that she has ever witnessed in 20 years as a government contract supervisor. She will now be removed from her post and offered a junior position in a different department. The Pentagon said she was offered the opportunity to retire early, but she turned it down. Three Democratic congressmen demanded an official investigation before this demotion goes into effect, and Pentagon officials have denied the move has anything to do with her opinions on the KBR contract. The ozone layer has stopped shrinking, but it will take decades to start recovering. Finally, some good news from U.S. scientists. They said an international agreement to limit production of ozone-depleting chemicals has apparently worked, but the damage to ozone has not been completely halted. An analysis of satellite records and surface monitoring instruments shows the ozone layer has grown a bit thicker in some parts of the world. That's good, but it is still well below normal levels. The scientists report this in Wednesday's issue of the Journal of Geophysical Research. As oil prices flirted with the $70 a barrel mark, more than 95% of the Gulf of Mexico's normal daily oil production has been shut because of Hurricane Katrina. The U.S. Minerals Management Service says that 645 of the 819 staffed production platforms in the Gulf have been shut down, delaying production of 1.3 million barrels of oil. On a normal day, the Gulf produces 1.5 million barrels. The shutdowns also delayed production of 8.8 billion cubic feet of natural gas, or some 88% of the Gulf's normal daily gas production of 10 billion cubic feet. Since Katrina first threatened Gulf platforms, 4.6 million barrels of oil and 25.4 billion cubic feet of gas have been delayed from reaching the market. Storm-related production delays in the Gulf, which accounts for about a third of our nation's domestic oil production, have figured increasingly into energy price jumps. As a matter of fact, I went to the pump today. It's already up another 10 cents. Rescuers along the hurricane-ravaged Gulf Coast pushed aside the dead to reach living in a race against time and rising waters, while New Orleans sank deeper into crisis and Louisiana's governor ordered storm refugees out of this drowning city. Now, two levees broke and sent water into the streets of the Big Easy a full day after New Orleans appeared to have escaped widespread destruction from Hurricane Katrina. An estimated 80% of the below sea level city was underwater, up to 20 feet deep in some places, with miles and miles of homes swamped. Most of you, of course, have seen the pictures of this. We've also got some for you on the coasttocoastam.com website. One Mississippi county alone said its death toll was at least 100, and officials are very, very worried that this is going to go a lot higher. In a moment, we will be talking with meteorologist Scott Stevens. He is an expert in weather. He's an expert in hurricanes. He's got his own views on that, but I did want to read this quick email that I received earlier today. As you know, we have in the past dabbled with positive thinking, mind consciousness. We did not do it this time, but I do believe many of you used your own prayers and thoughts to try to alter the direction, the course of this hurricane. Did it work? Well, listen to this. In the terms of economic damage and lives lost, Katrina may turn out to be one of the worst hurricanes in U.S. history. But the storm actually turned out to be much less powerful than predicted. Meteorologists say, and this is the key words here, puff of dry air coming out of the weakened area hit Katrina just before it reached land, transforming a Category 5 monster into a less threatening Category 3 storm. The last-minute gust also pushed Katrina slightly to the east of its Big Easy-bound trajectory, sparing New Orleans a direct hit, though not horrendous harm, obviously. It was kind of an amazing sequence of events, says a meteorologist. They have no idea what caused this simple puff of dry air. Well, maybe we know. In a moment, Scott Stevens, meteorologist, and his views on Hurricane Katrina. Scott Stevens has been a fascination with weather since he started keeping a weather diary for a scouting merit badge. And a year later, he was reporting conditions in his small town in Idaho to the area television stations. By Scott's senior year in high school, he was working at KIFI Television, which is the NBC affiliate in Idaho Falls. He was a studio camera operator and then a photographer for the news department. He went off to the University of Kansas to study meteorology. And then he has come back now in 1996, returning home to eastern Idaho, where he does weather on KPVI-TV. His website is called weatherwars.info, and he is our guest on Coast to Coast. Scott, did you anticipate Hurricane Katrina to do the kind of damage that she did?
George, I think when we saw Katrina make landfall in Florida and the eye of Katrina pass over the National Hurricane Center, the NHC, and the Tropical Prediction Center, something was up. I think that was a big clue that Katrina was going to be a little more than she was advertised to be as a Category 1 storm. I don't think any of us had a clue that she was going to do the kind of damage in southeastern Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama that she ended up doing. But still, the act of passing this storm or having it pass over the top of the NHC was significant in kind of foretelling the 3 days that would then ensue.
Scott, had those levees in New Orleans held, those two that burst, would the city have been relatively safe here?
Certainly much safer, and the cleanup would have not been quite the long, arduous affair that it's going to be if they indeed when they can finally stop the flooding from pouring into that city. But we're not even halfway through hurricane season yet, George. We have got 2 weeks before we reach that point, or at least the better part of 10 days. So the propensity for these storms to take aim at Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, the coastal areas of Florida, these folks are not out of the woods yet. They're
now, the water, Scott, continues to rise in New Orleans. Where's it coming from? All from Lake Pontchartrain now?
From Pontchartrain, sure. Sure, and those levees are soft. They're holding back lots of water. And once you weaken it all the way around, you have to wonder, as the water keeps rising and they have more pumps fail, if more do fail, then it's just a losing proposition. You have to stand back, and when do you say, really, maybe we should build somewhere else? maybe this wasn't the wisest place to put this many people, you know, to build in a bowl, not too unlike Amsterdam, you know, this close to an angry Gulf of Mexico. It's just not wise. And we talked about that 2 weeks ago.
Do you think it was just a matter of time? Had it not happened now, it might have happened months, years from now, where something like this was going to happen to New Orleans and other cities that are along some of the coasts?
Yep, I think it was an inevitability. And as we see these string of stronger hurricanes, not the tropical storms, the tropical depressions, and they used to greatly outnumber the major hurricanes, but now we seem to be almost evenly mixed. If we have 20 forms of storm, we end up with 10 tropical storms of depression and 10 big hurricanes. It's just the averages are not on our side right now. And as you mentioned in the beginning of the show, there was that wobble of the eye. And that was suspicious. It almost looked as if there were two eyes trying to form at one time, right at about 5:50 in the morning on Monday morning, and just enough of a wobble that you didn't see the incredible damage that rolled into Mississippi, manifest on top of New Orleans. So those folks in New Orleans had a day where we thought, oh, we made it. You know, at least half the city is salvageable, and then we can pump it out and clean it up. But once you see the water breach the levees via a storm surge or just collapse, the end result is the same.
Scott, how does water like that, the water we are seeing just flowing into New Orleans, how will it ever recede, if it will?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I don't know if you have to think that the Army Corps of Engineers and then those engineers that are responsible for that are going to stand there and wonder if they're even going to be tasked with having to pump it out, whether they will simply say it's not worth it, will simply move somewhere else. I mean, that has to be considered. It just, it's a beautiful, beautiful city, and it's going to be a loss without question. It's an incredible loss. But is it truly wise to rebuild again right there? And I don't know. I don't have that answer.
In some places, the water's 20 feet deep. How high can it go? Can it go way over that?
And until it reaches equilibrium. And in some places that's going to be 30 feet, and in other places it's going to be less than that. But either way, you know, there are going to be houses underwater contaminated with this environmentally toxic soup that I really don't know whether they're going to want to attempt or simply can't afford a cleanup. Now, we're talking tens upon tens of billions of dollars. And this is beyond what the insurance companies, probably beyond the risk that they signed up for in insuring these homes. When you have neighborhood after neighborhood, especially with real estate at these prices, you know, they've got to not wonder, maybe we'll be building somewhere else.
Scott, I've got to tell you, this, to me now, this is so absolutely shocking and incredible, because for weeks now, many of us here at Coast to Coast and those who listen to this program on a regular basis, we have all been feeling very strange. There's just something that we couldn't put our fingers on, some kind of catastrophe that we felt but couldn't explain. We didn't know if it was pure terrorism. We didn't know if it was earth changes related. We didn't know if there was an asteroid coming this way, and we didn't know about it. All we know is that we just felt uneasy. We felt strange. We talked 2 weeks ago, Scott, with an author who's written a book called The American Hiroshima, about the possibility of suitcase nukes being in America. And what is so strange about this is we talked about the possibilities of losing an American city. Losing an American city. And I said on this program, I did not think it would be a major city. It would not be the size of New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles if it was terrorist related.
Right.
But that we'd
right.
see a city the size of a St. Louis or a Kansas City or a New Orleans that would be taken out. Now, in this particular case, who would ever, ever suspect that in 2 weeks we would lose an American city this way?
And you're not alone in that feeling, that anxiousness, that knowing that something big was around the corner. And this is just one domino. When you take out a city economically, this nation simply cannot afford to keep bailing out disasters of this magnitude, one after the other after the other. And there will be domino dominoes that have yet to fall, that I don't think people yet have connected all of the dots. I mean, this is a lot of thinking you and I and others of this mindset have done before, because we can see these things happening. But others are just really have no idea the ramifications that we'll be dealing with by Thanksgiving as the effects from this event begin to play out. And they're all going to come from the financial markets and from the energy infrastructure.
Absolutely.
We need to be rationing fuel now. That needs to begin. We have about 25 days reserve at the rate we're using it. And we've already been shut down for 3 days, so that reserve continues to be drawn down. We're talking distillates, airline fuel and gasolines and heating, those things that have been distilled. And we need to use those at probably one quarter less than we are right now. And that has got to begin tomorrow.
And the problem, too, is we're losing, as I said, refining capability now. And who knows how long that's going to be out.
And that's why the reduction in usage has got to be immediate. And I'm surprised that something out of Washington has not come forth and says, folks, we need to withdraw and stop all unnecessary travel. Use your smaller vehicles. Don't make any unnecessary trips. Otherwise, the price of these products is going to go through the roof. And we'll wish we had been more careful in the days and weeks after this disaster. We've got to stop using this petroleum.
I don't believe in coincidences, and I've always believed that things happen because they happen. And in this particular case, I have always been a believer in positive thinking, just surrounding yourself with positiveness. And we have experimented in the past, and it has worked. Now, there have been some ramifications. You know, you may slow down a hurricane. We had one a couple of years ago that was approaching Louisiana. It was rapidly approaching a Category 5, dropped to a 2 and a 1. Within moments after we got off the air, meteorologists still are puzzled how that happened. My point on this, though, is that with every positive form of energy that's out there, there are people out there that want to do us in. They create negative energy. What are the possibilities? Even though I believe negative energy is going to whip around and get them eventually, what are the possibilities that some of this was caused by massive amounts of negative energy transmitted by people who hate us, who want to see us collapse?
You know, if you're thinking just individual minds focusing, probably not all that great. You give a few people who have a lot of power and with their intent and want to do harm and use and channel that intent through other technologies, I think it's wholly possible. But I think individually and the power of positive thought can allow, I'm going out on a limb here, these puffs of dry air to manifest, and then we have, you know, a wobble in a storm. Whether that's what's happened or not, I'm not saying. But I'm just saying, who's to question, you know, underlying all of creation is pure potentiality. It is the mind, the power of the mind, that then acts on that quantum realm, that God realm, to change this three-dimensional reality. And we all have that power within us. All of
you
us
know,
have that power.
In some way, Scott, now I know what it was like for people who are on Atlantis when their tragedy occurred. And I think, of course, their situation was faster.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? But just witnessing what I've been seeing over the last day or so, now I have an idea of what might have happened 30,000 years ago.
And, George, we go back to November, or go forward to November, and look back at the months of September and October. The things we're going to have unfold in the next 60 days will be incredibly rapid for those who are caught unaware. For those who are prepared, it probably hasn't happened quickly enough, because we're just anxious for the changes to get going so we can begin to bring a better way of life to the way things are presently. It's just too many of us are just frustrated with the stupidity of the way the world is run right now. You know, we number one, we don't need petroleum. We haven't needed it for 80 years, yet it's still the lifeblood of the society, and that's because of a lack of leadership, an absolute lack of leadership.
And greed.
Well, absolutely, and the two sadly go hand in hand, and it's that way with any democracy. You put people and power together, and it's those who are attracted to power, the ones that end up in power, rather than those who have the intent of the good of humanity in their hearts. And that's just, it's just the way it is. And we have to get around that. We have to have literally all hell break loose, and people want change before they'll get off their duffs and demand the change. They have to be uncomfortable. And if that's 30 foot of water in your house, then it's 30 foot of water in your house.
When we come back, we'll take phone calls with our guest meteorologist, Scott Stevens, and also talk about the scientific causes of this hurricane, Hurricane Katrina. Why did it happen? I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And in a moment, we're going to take your phone calls and also continue our dialogue with Scott Stevens, meteorologist. His website is linked up near his name at coasttocoastam.com. And if you have the ability to use your computer at this moment, you might want to get up there and look at the feature article story that Lex has posted. It ties right into what we're talking about. Back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie with meteorologist Scott Stevens and your phone calls. Scott, as you watched Katrina develop, gain strength, did you see anything really unusual about this hurricane?
Watching it rather closely, I was surprised how little that was unusual that I noticed. Often in this warfare that happens in the skies, and especially as storms approach the coastal areas, we'll often see bursts of warming in the infrared imagery, where the bright white clouds appear to fade a little, fade down, and you get basically thinner clouds or less intense thunderstorms. And there was not a lot of that happening near the core of the storm until we got very close to landfall. So I was kind of surprised. And then also, it made landfall that hour, actually 6-7 hours before landfall. I wasn't up watching it that closely because I'm out west, and those folks are a little more interested than say we are, who need some sleep. But as the storm got on land and the intensity continued, I went through the archives and dug up some very interesting imagery, and there were certainly some signatures and some shapes of clouds and imprints of shapes on those clouds that was without question unusual, and that has to be this influence of this electromagnetic technology that was deployed the better part of 30 years ago against the rest of the world.
Now, let me ask you then, Scott, specifically, do you believe that Hurricane Katrina was created or altered by someone or somebodies?
Created and then driven to where she needed to be. Created and then driven. And I was disappointed at the countermeasures deployed by our side against this storm. They were wholly inadequate. We've seen other storms spin down from fives to ones and twos before landfall. This one did not.
This one was
allowed to come in as strong, just about as strong as it could have been.
Okay, now when you say created, I'm going to ask you in a moment, by whom, in your opinion?
Okay.
And then when you say driven, are you saying it was intentionally focused at these refineries, these oil depots, these natural gas supplies?
Yes, 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 yes. Just like Ivan was last year. Remember, the Russians have claimed that they had this technology, have deployed this technology, and can use this technology at will. This is their statement. This isn't mine. This is theirs. And to be able to form this storm across the southeastern Bahamas and then work it across the National Hurricane Center into Miami, so basically we hit two major metro areas, and then do a nice little bend towards the southwest where almost all the computer models took it towards the north and northwest up along the one of them, the primary one we use for large-scale forecasting, took it northward along the east coast of Florida. The models were that off. There was one model that took it just north of the Florida Keys, which is far, far closer to its path, but that model was considered an outlier and not to be relied upon. But it had done very well previously with forecasting this storm. And it did the nice turn off toward the north and was deliberately steered exactly to where they wanted it to go.
So
the error was not large.
Can't we simply say, though, this was an act of Mother Nature? She created another hurricane. We are in hurricane season, and this one was just a big one, and it hit the wrong place at the wrong time for us.
And that mentality has been counted on for 30 years. So responsibility for the activities in the skies doesn't happen. And that's how they've gotten away with it for so bloody long, is because, oh, it's hurricane season. Oh, it was the loop current in the Gulf. That's just crap.
So you are saying the Russians created Hurricane Katrina and sent her on her merry way to destroy those refineries and natural gas supplies.
We're talking Ivan and Katrina. What nationality do those names sound like?
Well, they sound Russian.
Don't they, though? And it's just an interesting coincidence, isn't it? Yeah, the ownership for those names, ownership for those storms. Definitely.
If other meteorologists, Scott, gathered on the phone right now, would they agree with you that hurricanes can be created,
Not until we've sat down and they understand the technology, how it works, the flaws within their laws of thermodynamics and conservation of energy, all of those laws that are unyet recognized through the Western scientific community. And until that happens, they'll still shake their heads and say it is impossible. We will continue to suffer the effects of this weaponry.
Now, when you say that we should have counteracted, what could we have done to slow Katrina down, to move it, to do whatever we needed to
do? This happens with storms out west, which has largely kept our drought intact through the western states. As large storms come in, you would see these bursts, these negative energy bursts, negative ionic bursts, and that disrupts the flow of the storms, releases the bond, the static bond that holds the clouds together. It's just simply let go, and it falls apart. I mean, there's an article on my page called Holes, and you can see evidence of these strikes. And they happen all the time, and there were very, very few of these strikes prior to landfall around Katrina.
Right,
there is unusual geometry, but much greater countermeasures could have been deployed.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning there, George. You have a fantastic show, you and Art, and my hat goes off to you guys. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller, and I have an interesting question. I'm wondering if there's ever been any other storms that have ever been, have that, puff of cool air that Scott was speaking of earlier in association with, the way how this storm veered off from the west and did a 90-degree turn and ended up going east of New Orleans?
Good question. Scott?
Often this happens. The reverse is also the case with Frances, as she grew larger and then stalled just off the coast. It's the same thing. The technology is so far advanced that you can slow it down, you can speed it up, you take advantage of the moisture to sit over or just offshore to basically extend the area of angular momentum, so you have a much, much larger wind field. But I don't have names in front of me. I think Dennis did something similar. Ivan did fall apart prior to landfall last year. The south and southwestern eye wall just collapsed a few hours before landfall. And so as it loomed off the coast as a massive storm, it came ashore much, much weaker. And you almost begin to expect that there will be weakening prior to landfall because these countermeasures have been deployed in the past. And Charlie, we didn't see that. Before the measures could be deployed, Charlie turned hard inland across Punta Gorda, Florida last September. And they dealt with these kind of strong winds and probably a grossly undercounted death toll for that storm as well.
So you are saying, though, that this mysterious puff of dry air was created?
Oh, sure. Yep. If they don't know where it came from, it just appeared. And that's one of the hard things to accept about this technology is that it has access to space-time. And you can draw energy from the local space-time environment. And they will go to great lengths to protect this portfolio of weaponry. Great lengths.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. Welcome to Coast. Hi there. Hello.
George,
go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
This is Jason from Alabama.
Hi, Jason.
And
hi.
I've been studying weather, I guess, on my own for about 8 years, and I had a couple questions for Scott. One of them was the puff of dry air that he mentioned. I went through Hurricane Opal and Ivan and Dennis, and in Opal and Ivan, we had massive tornado reports. And for Hurricane Dennis, we didn't. Mm-hmm. We did again with Hurricane Katrina. And I was wondering if that puff of dry air created a dry line to create tornadoes.
Ooh, that would happen on a much smaller scale. Much, much smaller scale. That dry air would have been absorbed very, very quickly into the circulation with Katrina. You know, it's just a function of the number of intense thunderstorms that would eventually bring about the tornadoes, because there's an incredible amount of shear. And the term is helicity, where you get a change in direction of the wind flow as you move higher and higher across the thunderstorm. But again, with this matrix, this weather matrix superimposed across the whole system, truly you can turn on or turn off the tornadoes. It's just that far along.
Okay. And I had one more question, which was everything I've read about, they're talking about the 40-year upswing in frequency of hurricanes. And we've seen that since about 1995.
95 was a big season.
What is your prediction for the upcoming maybe 15, 20 years?
I think they have chosen to call an upswing. It's just they're looking at the observed data, the observed events, and saying, well, we must be in an upswing in activity. It's much like looking at the thermometer during the morning. It's going up, so we're in a warming trend. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to continue, because they have not acknowledged the fact that this technology exists and what its capabilities are, and its deployment regularly across the Bahamas, the tropical Atlantic, and into the southeastern U.S. Once that is acknowledged, all of their models have to be rewritten. All of their assumptions have to be revisited. And that's something that I don't know that they're anxious to do, because then there's an admission and a standing before the public of, well, I guess we really didn't know what the heck we're talking about. And they don't want to do that. They're just not brave enough to face that music.
Richard C. Hoagland, of course, EnterpriseMission.com and Coast to Coast Science Advisor, has been watching hyperdimensional hurricanes for about a year now. And he's published on his blog some information on Katrina. He's on the air with us now, too, Scott. Hi, Richard. Welcome aboard.
Good evening, George. Scott, it's really a pleasure to talk to you. I heard you when you did the show with Art, I guess it was about a year ago.
It was late January.
And it seems like a year. A lot's happened in this year.
Oh, boy, hasn't it?
And I was fascinated with the fact that you've come at this as a professional meteorologist from a totally different direction than I have. But we arrived, and I was just sitting here dumbfounded, and Rob and I were looking at each other. You're saying exactly about Katrina what I've been writing about on the Enterprise website for the last 2 days.
Yep. And it's your work has been one of the clues that I needed to be able to see what I needed to see and honestly have the balls to get out there and say it.
It does take a little bit of courage, doesn't it, to stand up against your colleagues who seem to be determined to keep their head in the sand.
Well, you know, we'll let them get buried in the water. You know, it's sink or swim time.
Yeah, the problem, though, is that we have millions, literally millions of innocent people who are victims in this undeclared global weather war.
Yep.
I think you have pegged it correctly. I had a call last night. I've had a call several nights, you know, from some of my intel sources, because we do have sources in the intelligence community who are not happy with what's going on, and so they talk. And you have to calibrate their conversation with other input. But this particular source has been extremely reliable. And I basically, you know, the first time he got on the phone, I said, okay, are we at war? And he kind of hemmed and hawed. And then there was 2 days and then a callback and a callback. And finally last night, he admitted that we're in a war, that it's the former Soviet Union, which is the enemy here.
Mm-hmm.
You pegged it exactly right on Ivan and Katrina.
Yep.
By the way, don't you find MSNBC's use of the Isabel pentagonal geometry for all their hurricanes so cute?
I pointed that out in the newsroom this evening because we were watching MSNBC, and watching the water pour into New Orleans. And then there was that slug where they just put the different name on it. I mean, all of the clues are there if you'll just wake up.
Well, I think somebody at NBC has waked up, and they're trying to tell. Everybody is afraid, you know, except for very few of us, to simply stand up and say the emperor not only has no clothes, but is shivering.
Well, he's not even the emperor. That's
Richard, why can't we simply say Mother Nature has created a hurricane, it's hurricane season, and we're going to get 6 to 10 of these things. We don't know how big, and these things are just happening.
Look at the numbers.
Why can't we say that?
CNN pointed out last night, to my shock, because I should have realized it myself, that on this date 12, 13 years ago, 1992, on August 24th, Andrew came ashore across Homestead. Right, Scott?
Mm-hmm. Right. It was within.
Andrew was an A hurricane, George.
Yes.
It was the first one of the season. This was a K hurricane, the 10th of the season, and it came ashore on exactly the same date over Homestead.
Yep.
Somebody has a very ironic sense of humor. It then went across, as you noted, the National Hurricane Center.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of up yours.
That's a heads up.
Exactly. Then it crossed into the Gulf, made a nice 77-degree turn to the right, and headed straight like a homesick homing pigeon for New Orleans.
Well, what if we're in the middle, though, of massive earth changes?
And we are.
We're in a cycle.
See, that's where Scott's ideas and my ideas kind of come together, because what I've been saying for the last couple, 3 years is that the entire physics, the so-called hyperdimensional background physics against which this is all being played out,
mm-hmm.
is rising, rising, rising. It's like having more money in your bank account, George. If you have more disposable income, you can do more cute things with that income.
Yep.
There has been more energy, to use a popular term, available to play havoc with natural storms, to do cute little things. And I think Isabel, by the way, Scott, was a test bed where our guys used the same technology and mapped and scoped the hell out of what they were doing. If you look at all the sensors brought to bear, all the NASA technology, all the NOAA satellites, all the aircraft, Isabel was their test case. And that's why someone is using Isabel as the kind of subliminal signal, hey, guys, pay attention. This is what somebody is doing to us.
I'll tell you also what's strange is, you know, when there's bad weather, like the tsunami, of course, that occurred on December 26th, you had nations all around this planet offering help and assistance.
Yep.
I haven't heard of one country offer any assistance to this country.
Larry King asked the governor of Louisiana tonight, Ms. Blanco, if any other countries had offered us assistance, and she demurred and said other governors have offered, but not one country did she mention.
Well, do you remember that? The puny amount we ponied up in December for Indonesia, it was a slap in the face.
And then we were shamed into doing more and more. The bottom line, Scott, is what do we have to do to get Americans, as you said, mad enough to get up off their duff and do something and realize that we're being played for suckers?
I think we're doing it. I truly think we're doing it. I think little bit by little bit, enough, a quotient is being reached. I don't know whether we're there yet, but I think there is another hyperdimensional physics event coming, and I think it's going to be a quake, and I think it'll be this fall. I think we've got another one coming.
Well, it's strange, Scott, because even your dates, your predictions are very close with Dr. Luis Turi, who we had back on last night, who predicted this date, this episode, and we chatted about that with him. Lots of strange things are occurring indeed. Richard, you're going to provide us with some continual updates at the bottom of each half hour, and then you're going to join me during the last hour of our program tonight for some open line phone calls and a little bit more about your hyperdimensional hurricane theory.
Okay, and Scott, keep up the good work. We need people like you.
I'm so enjoying it. The feedback has been overwhelmingly positive, and I know there are weather departments in newsrooms across the country that are curious, but it takes too much courage, apparently, to be first for so many of them. You know, and they don't have the background or the curiosity to study the hyperdimensional physics, to study the possibility of scalar weapons. That's just not on their radar. They're too busy reading books to third graders.
Scott, I'd like to see more meteorologists, more of your peers and colleagues join hands with you and Richard in this theory.
It'll happen.
All right. Thanks a lot, Scott. Appreciate your update. Scott Stevens. I'll be back in a moment with our guest, Dr. Gabriel Cousins. We're going to talk a little bit about alternative medicine, your health, using consciousness to change things. He's got some incredible stories how people have been able to surround themselves with positive energy and cure themselves, and some incredible pictures as well, that some of which you will find on his website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.